Your call is now begun.
Great. I want to welcome everyone who's joined. Thank you so much for taking the time to do so. My name is Grant Harris. This is part of a series by the Pacific Council on International Policy, part of the summer series on territorial disputes. And today we're going to be talking about Somaliland. And we've got a couple of fantastic experts on the phone. I'm going to draw from them and then open the conversation up to questions. By way of brief introduction, as I said, my name's Grant, and my background has been working on Africa for some time, including as President Obama's senior advisor on Africa in the White House. And I now advise companies that are doing business in sub-Saharan Africa. And we've got two colleagues on the phone, Professor Michael Woldemariam, who's an associate professor at Boston University. He's written extensively on the Horn of Africa. And we also have Sigal Abshir. Unfortunately, Bronwyn Bruton was unable to make it last minute because of a non-work issue. But Sigal has very kindly jumped in. She's an independent consultant in the region. She's worked in the past as an advisor to the UN political mission in Somalia and for the Somali government, and has been working in the region for a very long time as well. And so the purpose of the conversation today, which is on the record, is to tease out some of the issues related to Somaliland, to give an understanding of its role in the region, and to really think through some of these issues about what are going on and what this claim for recognition is and what the arguments for and against might be. And with that, Sigal, I was hoping to turn first to you and ask if you could help us understand what is happening generally with respect to Somaliland, to provide somewhat of an overview and help frame this conversation in terms of the key issues of Somalia, the context, how Somaliland fits into this. Before we talk really about recognition specifically, can you help paint the scene?
Thank you very much, Grant, and thank you, Pacific Council, for having me here. I'm very excited to be here talking with you and with Michael as well. So Somaliland today is, as you mentioned, is a region that has been seeking international recognition as a sovereign country, and this has been the case since 1991. And if you'll bear with me, I need to sort of take you back a little bit into history to explain a little bit the context of Somalia and Somaliland. In the colonial period, the Somali people have lived in the Horn of Africa region, and the Somali people are kind of unique in the African history in that there's a people with one language, one religion that have been spread across several different regions. And during colonial times, these regions were under the control of three different European colonial powers. That would be the British, the Italian, and the French, as well as some part of the Somali people living within the Ethiopian, territory. Only two of these regions, the former Italian Somaliland and former British Somaliland, came together to form the Somali Republic in 1960. And this was the republic that was the country that we knew as Somalia. There were attempts, various unsuccessful attempts to try to unite other of these sort of Somali-inhabited regions over the course of the 70s, the 60s and the 70s. But nothing came of them. And really, the Somali Republic was really only ever made up of the former Italian and former British colonies. The Civil War brought an end to the Republic of Somalia in 1991, as you all probably are aware. And 4 months later, the northwestern regions of Somalia, the area that was formerly British Somaliland, declared their independence and desire to be recognized internationally. And that has been the case since 1991 to today, almost 30 years. They have administered themselves. They've been handling their own security, their own economy, and have, sought unsuccessfully to date to get this international recognition. But they're still working to do that through various lobbying and whatever. And I think this is probably why we're talking about them today.
That's an excellent background. And I want to pull that thread a bit more. Can you please tell us what is this claim for recognition or this assertion? What are some of the arguments for and the arguments against?
Well, just to unpack the claim and sort of Somaliland's sort of reasons for seeking international recognition, I would put them into three buckets. I think the first one I would describe as the desire to, and I think it's even been said by one of the former presidents, reasserting a right to self-determination as the rest of Somalia descended into chaos. And that's a quote. But basically the idea being, you know, Somalia was in the throes of a civil war and a protracted sort of state failure. And Somaliland, this region, managed to basically bring the people, the residents there together and come up with some sort of an administration and come up with, you know, and have some success in, like, in building. And so the claim is, this is an island of stability and security in a country that still today is actually, you know, even all these years since the original claim, is still struggling. And so I'd say the first claim would be, you know, this argument of stability and security. The second claim, I think Western is, I would describe it as sort of the more emotional or moral claim, where the region of Somaliland and the people of Somaliland suffered under the former dictatorship just before the collapse. The Abdullah's government was quelling some of the uprisings across the country, and the reprisals were getting harsher and harsher. And this resulted in the harshest reprisal took place actually in the city of Hargeisa, which is today the capital of Somaliland, with an aerial bombardment in 1989 where the Somali Air Force actually threatened the city of Hargeisa, resulting in the death of 50,000 to 60,000 people. And so I think that this is a very strong, a very sort of prevalent part of the claim, in the sense that Somaliland suffered at the hands of the former Somali administration and is seeking, you know, to chart a new path, partly because of that. And I'd say the third part of the claim is a slightly more legalistic one, where Somaliland argues that they're not actually seceding from Somalia. Their argument is that the British Somaliland actually was granted independence 5 days prior to Italian Somaliland. And so actually there was a period of 5 days where this was a standalone country. And the union that happened on July 1st, when the rest of the country, when the Italian former colony became independent, that was a union. Therefore, what they're doing is not seceding, but undoing, revoking a union. And I think this is sort of the third piece of the argument, which is sort of a legalistic one. Just to quickly, I mean, I think that the arguments for and against, you know, the biggest argument for recognizing Somaliland, I believe, rests on the actual practical and tangible progress that the administration and authorities and the people of Somaliland have made in terms of creating institutions and establishing, you know, a level of security and peace. Budding democracy. There's been several rounds of elections held there, and so the argument for would be this is, you know, and all of this is done with relatively small support from the outside world, and the idea being the lives of the people there could be further improved if this country to receive international recognition and you know, be able to continue as a country. I think the arguments against recognition would be, the most obvious one being that the country of Somalia still asserts its right to territorial sovereignty, and Somaliland, so, you know, under the UN and under the AU, is a part of Somalia, and there has been no sort of political agreement. This current desire for recognition is almost a unilateral thing, and there would need to be some sort of a political agreement. Certainly, if we're going to look at the example of Eritrea and South Sudan, there would need to be some agreement with the sort of original country. and that is not there. Somali federal government, for example, will argue that Somaliland is represented within the government and within the parliament. There are people from that region who do occupy positions in the parliament and in senior positions in the federal government of Somalia, including Deputy Prime Minister, including Chief Justice and the Speaker of the Senate. And those are positions that are, you know, specifically, you know, intended for Somaliland in the power sharing formula. So I think that, the sort of biggest block against this recognition would be the position of Somalia. And I think a second challenge for recognition would be the issue of borders. And by that I mean the border between Somaliland and Somalia. The eastern border of Somaliland is one that is currently disputed with Somalia, or in particular the region that borders Somaliland is called Puntland. And this is a border dispute that has at various times erupted in violence, you know, because of the populations that live on that current border, on that border area, are themselves split. Some of them, you know, claiming to be part of Somaliland, some of them claiming to be part of greater, you know, of Somalia. And I think the Somaliland argument that we should use the British colonial borders is not one that holds water on the ground. And then finally, you know, and this relates to both of them, is there is, you know, within Somaliland, there is, it's not clear to me how present these people are, but there is a unionist faction. There are people who would prefer to be part of Somalia and would not prefer to secede. But this, and this is a group of people who are sort of, these are the ones who will participate in sort of Somalia, the Somali government. And I think that they're just not to be forgotten. I presume if there was a referendum one day, it would be clear what sort of percentages we're talking about. But for now, all we know is that they're there. It's not clear how big they are. I'm going to stop there.
Sure. Thank you. That's an incredible overview. I think it really rounds out the argument. Mike, I wanted to turn to you. First, a lot has been put on the table in painting the picture. I'd welcome your reactions or your take on some of those questions. I want to turn to the regional dynamics in a moment, but before doing so, what's your sense of what's going on, and also what do you make of the recognition issues that Segal has laid out?
Right. So thank you, Grant, for moderating, and Pacific Council for the invitation, and thanks, Segal, for participating. I agree with pretty much everything that you said in your narration. So a couple of things just on sort of the genesis of sort of Somaliland's claim to sort of statehood, and just and kind of the origins of kind of distinctive Somalilander identity. And I just would just emphasize or reemphasize two points. I mean, of course, the British period and sort of the unique experience of British colonialism, I think, drove some of that, drives both the legal claim today, but also sort of the distinctiveness of Somaliland's national identity. But also, and this is something Segal mentioned, the sort of brutal late Civil War period in the late 1980s when Somaliland was pretty much bombed to the ground by Siad Barre's forces. I think that reinforced an older sense of historical grievance that emerged in the 1960s over questions of Somaliland's political representation in Mogadishu. And one has to sort of excavate the military history of that period of the late 1980s. There was a movement an organization that was kind of the that basically mobilized Somalilanders behind this anti-Siad Barre campaign. It was called the Somali National Movement. In 1988, they from camps in Ethiopia, they enter back into Somaliland and basically force Siad Barre's hand. And so he cracks down very harshly with indiscriminate bombing, all manner of atrocities. And it's that period, I think, that really creates a sense of grievance that really reinforced Somaliland's, or the claim of statehood on the part of Somalilanders. So I just want to emphasize that. On the current legal argument for Somaliland's independence, I mean, I would emphasize, there was one other thing I would emphasize that I don't think was mentioned, which is, and this is often raised by Somalilanders themselves, which is the Act of Union in 1960 between Somalia and Somaliland. So essentially what was to happen was legislatures from both Somaliland and Somalia were to vote on an Act of Union that brought the two countries together. But apparently, they voted on different acts of union. And so Somalilander would argue that at its very inception, this was an illegal act of union. And that's okay. Of course, that's the contested history, but this is a legal argument, that they would make. I mean, the act of union that the Somaliland legislature voted on, tended to have or had a few more protections for Somaliland's economy and asserted certain rights and privileges. So I just want to emphasize that. And as far as the legal argument goes, I mean, they also, I think Seagal also mentioned this. I mean, they make the argument that this was a voluntary union, and voluntary unions, there is a norm against secession and redrawing borders in Africa enshrined in the OAU Charter, Organization of African Unity Charter of 1963. But they say this is a voluntary union, and there are examples in the African context of voluntary unions being dissolved, right? So Senegambia, the United Arab Republic between Egypt and Syria, Cape Verde and Guinea-Bissau. But this is true, but the problem with this argument, and Seagal pointed this out very correctly, is that in pretty much all of these cases, you had, this was a mutual separation. Like, each side might have not been happy about it, but they recognize the sovereignty and independence of the other. And in this case, the problem for Somaliland is you don't have a government in Mogadishu that is willing to recognize Somaliland's independence. And to understand the centrality of this point, the prospects of Somaliland's sort of recognition globally, you just have to compare it with the case of Eritrea, which is separated from Somaliland by Djibouti. I mean, Eritrea and Somaliland embark on independent statehood at exactly the same time, right? So the first half of 1991, you have nationalist movements that are controlling both countries in 1991 after the collapse of old regimes and are making claims to independence. Eritrea by 1993 is a recognized country, and the reason is because there was a government in Ethiopia from which Eritrea was separating from that recognized Eritrean independence. Somaliland and the SNM movement that controlled it in the early 1990s didn't have that kind of endorsement from Mogadishu. So I think that's been the critical difference. And I will leave it there. I will leave it that there in terms of weighing in.
That's an incredible review as well. And I think it gets to an important point about the broader region, the neighborhood in which this situation is playing out. Can you start to set that scene as well? It's been incredibly tumultuous over the last year in particular, but help us understand some of the key dynamics as we're trying to frame Somaliland within Somali, which we've discussed, but also Somaliland and Somali within the broader Horn.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of different regional and I would say broader geopolitical dynamics that are shaping the Somaliland's quest for statehood, or might shape Somaliland's quest for statehood. And I'm not sure exactly how, but they're relevant. They're clearly relevant. So let me mention a couple. The first is that since 2011, 2012, you have seen a process of slow, halting state reconstruction in South Central Somalia, in Mogadishu, as the international community has aligned itself behind the federal government of Somalia, this new federal architecture, and is contributing billions and billions of dollars to actually rebuild the political system in South Central Somalia. And so now, obviously, as you know, the activity of Al-Shabaab certainly demonstrates, I mean, this effort is a work in progress, but you have more of a state in Somalia today, South Central Somalia in Mogadishu today, than you did, let's say, in 2010, 2011. And I think that raises certain questions, I think, for Somaliland. It raises certain strategic dilemmas. So that's one issue. I'm not saying that this is a government that the government in Mogadishu is in any way a real sort of political military threat to Somaliland, but if, you know, but it's, But so much of Somaliland's claim to statehood has depended on or hinged on the chaos or perceived chaos in the south. So as you see the emergence of a new political project there, halting, of course, and not complete, you know, that, I think that raises certain questions for Somaliland. The other issue, the more recent issue, I would say, and these two other issues are more significant, the other two issues I'm going to mention. So in Ethiopia, you've seen a major political change and a political transition, a leadership transition. Ethiopia is, for better or worse, the political and economic center of gravity in the Horn of Africa. It is the region's most populous state. It has its most high-quality military. And for many years, Ethiopia was politically supportive of Somaliland's project. Of course, they would not endorse Somaliland's independence, but because they didn't want to be perceived as undermining Somali sovereignty, they have their own long-running feud with the government in Mogadishu. But they've been sort of quietly, sort of de facto supportive of Somaliland's quest. But with this new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, it appeared at least that he was reorienting Ethiopia's policy towards Somalia and beginning to favor the government in Mogadishu and the government led by President Farmajo at the expense of Somaliland. And so that's a particular challenge. Or that is posing a particular challenge for Somaliland. I do think he has, this Prime Minister Ethiopia has recalibrated in recent months as he's recognized that, in fact, he actually does have to engage with Somaliland and they are a political player in the region. But that's a shift that I think has been important, has ramifications for Somaliland's quest for independence. And the third issue, and this is actually moving in the other direction, and this bolsters Somaliland's quest, is the Gulf factor, right? So what we've seen over the last couple of years is a real emergence of activity, political, military, economic activity of Middle Eastern, particularly Gulf countries in the Horn of Africa, because they consider the Horn a strategic piece of real estate. Somaliland itself shares a long coast along the Gulf of Aden. It's right by the Bab el Mandab and the southern approach to the Suez Canal. And so many countries in the Middle East find Somaliland important for that reason. And Somaliland is leveraging that geopolitical engagement to kind of bolster its de facto statehood and boost its economy. So it's recently signed a big deal with an Emirati company called Dubai Ports World, which will give Dubai Ports World some ability to develop a commercial port in Somaliland's port of Berbera, and also develop a military base in Somaliland. So this is important because it means that Somaliland, even though it is a de facto state, is now broadening its international relations with key players in the global system. And so that I think bolsters its quest for independence. So those are like the three things I would mention: the dynamics in Somalia, the Ethiopia factor, and then the Middle East Gulf country engagement.
I think those are key factors. And Sigal, I wanted to pull you back in and get your reaction on some of the regional issues. I just wanted to ask one follow-up question of Mike first, particularly as you were left off just now on talking about the Horn. And some of our listeners may have seen, even just earlier this week, a few days ago, the New York Times article that was talking about, the title really said it all, about guns, cash, and terrorism, Gulf states vie for power in Somalia. And within that, though, only briefly mentioned, there is an issue with Puntland and Somaliland and South Central Somalia and how some of the rivalries among Gulf states, for instance, are actually playing out in terms of the politics of the region. Is there anything that you could add to your comments in that sense in terms of not just about the importance of the Horn or the Gulf states overall, but how, if at all, or to rephrase it as a question, do some of these rivalries amongst Middle Eastern states and with their respective engagements in Africa, does that affect Somaliland or its engagements with South Central Somalia or Somalia writ large?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great point. And I should have prefaced my comments by saying, I mean, one reason that states from the Middle East are increasingly engaging in the Horn of Africa is because of their own rivalries in the Middle East, right? So the Gulf crisis was a big precipitant of this of this Middle Eastern engagement in the Horn of Africa. So, you know, you had Saudi Arabia, the UAE versus Qatar and Turkey. And so what's ended up happening is that the government in Mogadishu, for a lot of different political reasons, has basically been embraced by Qatar and Turkey. Turkey has been a big stakeholder in South Central Somalia since about 2010, 2011. Many of the federal member states in Somalia and Somaliland, the self-declared Republic of Somaliland, have been embraced or basically taken the side of the UAE and Saudi Arabia in the context of this overall Gulf crisis, Gulf dispute. And so that is hardening, I think, some of the divisions, both within Somalia, but also between Somalia and Somaliland. And certainly the authorities in Mogadishu are very worried about, about the relationship between Somaliland and the UAE in particular, and this Emirati base in Berbera and its development of commercial assets in Berbera. This is because they see it as basically Somaliland de facto kind of broadening its independence, and that they see it as a waypoint on Somaliland's eventually actually reaching independence. That's sort of the contours of how the Gulf crisis is playing out in the Horn.
Understood. Seagal, Mike laid out a few different issues in terms of halting federal consolidation in Somalia, the leadership transition in Ethiopia, the role of Gulf states, including rivalries therein. Are we missing anything as we think about the regional dynamics? Are there views that you have that are different in any case, or can you just help us flesh out our understanding of these regional trends and factors?
Yeah. Thanks. I really like the way Michael laid out those three things, and I'll just comment and hopefully add on to that. Michael's point about the strengthening, or rather the investment in the strengthening of the Somali government, the strategic dilemma for Somaliland, I think is a really interesting one. Around the same time as the strengthening started, I just want to point out there's been attempts to kick off talks between Somalia and Somaliland. And this started, I think, as far back as 2012. The course of the last 7 years, the country that has sort of become the mediator, has taken up the role of mediator, has been Turkey, which I think is incredibly interesting, especially given some of these other factors. And I think in 2013-14, they hosted about three different talks. This has sort of slowed down over time, and I don't know if all the, if Somaliland has the same level of sort of confidence in Turkey that, say, Mogadishu does. But Turkey still very much considers itself a mediator. And as sort of the Somali government gets stronger, these talks are sort of being brought up more and more and more. And I think, obviously, I think Somaliland is eager to have to sort of start the process and sort of get some sort of resolution, and that would help them towards getting internationally recognized. The delays have often been coming from Somalia, either whether it's from sort of a capacity or sort of being distracted by lots of other issues, or, it's not clear, sort of a more strategic sort of wait and see while the government gets stronger. So I just think it's interesting that these attempts to have talks keep sort of starting and stopping. And it'll be interesting to see when they actually kick off. The second thing I just wanted to add to – sorry?
No, please continue.
The second thing I just wanted to add with regard to sort of the role of the Gulf states, Qatar has indeed been very engaged in Somalia from around, like you said, I think 2010, 11, 12, or around then. But the relationship with the Emirates and with Saudi Arabia, certainly of the northern part of the country, which includes Somaliland and Puntland, goes back much, much longer. There's a sort of a historical relationship. And I think one aspect that sometimes gets overlooked is the economic one. where a mainstay of the economy of Somaliland and certainly Puntland in the north of Somalia is the livestock trade. And the main market is Saudi Arabia for the Hajj season. And the financial center, essentially, the Emirates has been acting as really the financial hub of Somalia, seeing as very few banks and financial actors will interact with Somali institutions. So while, you know, some of this political stuff is happening, I feel like there's an economic rationale for these countries to continue to be linked, for these regions, for Somaliland and also the northern part of the country, to continue to be linked to the Emirates and Saudi. And I don't think Qatar offers an alternative economically. Like, they can't buy up all the livestock, and they certainly are not offering sort of to be a financial hub. And then the final point on the Dubai ports deal for the Berber port, I think it's very interesting that in the deal, Ethiopia has a stake in that port development. And so when the commercial port, while the Dubai Ports Company holds 51%, Ethiopia holds 19%, and I think that's another interesting factor, and I'd love to hear what you think of that, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I could, Grant, I don't know if I could just weigh in.
Please.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think on the, I absolutely agree with Sigal on the economic dimensions for, particularly from the perspective of Somaliland, of this longstanding economic dimension of its relationship with the Gulf, and particularly Saudi and the UAE. And livestock is absolutely critical. And it's interesting, I mean, if you look at the founding of the colony in the late 19th century, the Protectorate of Somaliland, British Protectorate of Somaliland, the reason that the British set up shop there is because they want to supply livestock to their colonial possession in Aden in Yemen. So this goes all the way back to the 19th century and is really, really quite critical. I think Somalilanders themselves, like everyone else in the region, is quite aware of the dangers of being sucked into the kind of morass of Gulf politics, but there's also like some hard underlying economic interests that they have to account for. The Ethiopian stake in Berber, this 19% stake, it's interesting. I mean, you hear different things from different people about where this whole project is going, the Berber corridor. You hear that there's a lot of momentum behind it. The Ethiopians are behind it. From others, you see that they've maybe cooled on the project because they've made a peace deal with Eritrea, and maybe, you know, may want to, you know, have an outlet or, you know, develop a corridor through Asab, and they are certainly expanding, their stakes in Djibouti. But I think this is related to the point I made earlier, which is some uncertainty about the direction of Ethiopian foreign policy in the Horn of Africa, right now, that no one is really quite sure where Ethiopia is sort of going. Certainly Ethiopia has a national interest in developing the Berber corridor with the UAE because mm-hmm. it pays a lot of money, way too much money in port fees, in going through Djibouti, right? I mean, Djibouti for, you know, since the Eritrea-Ethiopia War, 1990-2000, has had a chokehold on Ethiopian goods and services and its movement. So yeah, I mean, that is a consideration for them. It's just a question of to what extent is Ethiopian foreign policy in the region really being rebalanced, and what does that mean for how Ethiopia relates to both Somaliland and Somalia?
I wanted to broaden the lens a bit further as well, because we've talked a lot about the regional players, particularly in the Horn, but then also nearby Gulf states. I wanted to add some other international actors and pose the question to both of you as to how this issue plays for them. And, for instance, Sigal mentioned Turkey, and some listeners on the call may already understand that Turkey has made a dramatic play in Somalia. It's the largest Turkish embassy on the continent is in Mogadishu. The prime minister has traveled multiple times. There are burgeoning economic ties, huge investments in medical clinics and mosques and the like. But then you've also got the United States. You've got China's increased activity across Africa. Can you talk us through the other international actors that could or be influential here, or that may or may not have a view on this, some of the interests at stake beyond the most central regional? And I'm happy to either of you who wants to jump in first on that.
Well, I mean, I could say a few, Segal, if you don't mind, maybe I'll say a few things, and you could jump in, yeah.
I
think the position of the United States and Western countries more broadly is to at least take a formal position that supports the unity and territorial integrity of Somalia, but practically engage with Somaliland on a variety of issues. The British in particular have developed a bit of a security partnership. The United States and Western countries do provide assistance through various mechanisms to Somaliland. They would probably provide much more if Somaliland was an internationally recognized country, but they do engage directly, but also they fund and support a whole variety of NGOs that are operating there. But I should say, I mean, it's not the level of foreign assistance that you see in South Central Somalia. And that creates also, I think, a sense of grievance in Somaliland as well, that they've sort of been neglected. So that's, you know, I think that's sort of the position of those countries. China's interesting. China has really kind of given Somaliland the cold shoulder, much more than I think the West has. In part, I think it's because they have their own concerns about separatism in their country. And so their position has been, or the status of Tibet, or et cetera. So they've kind of been wary of being seen as endorsing Somaliland. So that's sort of where they've been. So that's how I read those two big actors. We already talked about Turkey and its role. It's tried to mediate. I think the Turkish mediation, for all intents and purposes, is probably over because they're just not seen, as Segal said, not seen as a neutral party. That's what I would say.
Okay. Segal, what would be your additions? What's your take on the broader international players in that spectrum?
I agree with Michael in terms of the big countries that he's mentioned. I do think, and we've talked about how the Western, whereas the international community, quote unquote, in our region used to be defined as mostly the Western countries, you know, that has changed lately with the arrival of Turkey and, of course, the Gulf players. I guess just to add, I do think one very interesting angle, Ethiopia is obviously, and Michael's talked about Ethiopia. I do think it's interesting to look at some of the other African countries in the region, if we look at the African Union peacekeeping mission, in addition to Ethiopia, we've got Kenyan troops, Ugandan troops, Djiboutian troops, and Burundian. But I think Kenya is an interesting one, in that, while they, like other African countries, have been not willing to recognize Somaliland and taking the AU line, I think recently there has been a little bit of a shift in that they have expressly reached out to Somaliland and I think are going to be setting up an office, or rather a consul. And I think this has been seen as kind of a diplomatic, there have been tensions lately between Kenya and Somalia because of a maritime dispute. And it's interesting to see countries in the region sort of using the recognition of Somaliland as a kind of a diplomatic, lever almost, with Somalia. But that's all I would add in terms of the way other countries are behaving. I think we've covered a lot of the big ones.
And we could, the Kenya example is Kenya's recent sort of policy shifts towards Somaliland, I think, are quite interesting and definitely linked, as you note, to their own issues over maritime and broader questions with the federal mm-hmm. government of Somalia. There's also Russia has been poking around, Egypt as well. So I do think if you talk to people in Somaliland political circles, there is a feeling, despite the issues with Ethiopia, there is a feeling that kind of the wind is at their sails and that there is a lot of, that the geopolitics of the region is kind of playing in their favor. So, I mean, it will be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
I want to unpack that further, before doing so, I wanted to let people on the call know that if you've got a question and would like to pose that question to our speakers, please press star and the number one. Keying off, though, Mike, of what you just said, the wind in the sails type perception, I'd be really interested to know your thoughts and Sigal's as well as to what you see in terms of trends or momentum. Do you think that that's a fair perception that supporters of independence might have? I think that is part and parcel of us going a little bit deeper and talking about other African states and the role of the African Union as well. Many observers were curious to know that when the president of Somaliland traveled to Guinea, he was received as a head of state. Somalia lodged a diplomatic protest, but didn't have much of a diplomatic relationship before that with Guinea to speak of. I'm interested to know if you see, with Kenya's shift and perhaps with others, do you see more states being more open to this idea? Do you see it being more static? Do you think it's a false perception and really it's just a muddled and mixed picture? How do we make sense of directionally where this might be headed? Mike, can you take us off and then I'll go to Sigal?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think on the one hand, I think there is something to this narrative that the wind is sort of at the sails of Somalilanders and the quest for independence. As you see, the Horn of Africa, the Red Sea Basin, the Gulf of Aden emerge as a real geopolitical hot zone. There are a lot of players looking for leverage and looking for partners, and Somaliland has emerged for certain countries as a partner or as a potential partner. And they're leveraging that and I think are conscious of it. But I think on the other hand, there is a sense in which there is a sense in which you sort of have to ask yourself, what exactly would external partners sort of get out of recognizing Somaliland, right? That is to say that like Somaliland is a pretty stable pocket of the Horn of Africa right now. It can engage in international relations with different countries, develop partnerships. So this may be a situation that sort of works for interested parties, international parties, and they may not want to sort of shake the boat a little too much by recognizing Somaliland or pushing the independence agenda. May have implications for Somaliland. It's in domestic politics. It may have implications for Somalia as well. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying that, yes, the wind is at their sails, but it's also hard to see many actors within the international community taking a big jump of recognition because the status quo kind of works with them, right? Somalia is a stable country, and it already is a partner to many of these players, right? So that's sort of how I see it. There all also is like this question of like the first mover, who would be the first mover, because no one really wants to take the risk of being a first mover on recognition. I think that's also been a problem. Ethiopia has long said that it won't be the first, but it definitely won't be the third, right? Meaning that the moment someone else recognizes it, they would recognize Somaliland. At least that was under the old government. So, yeah, so that's another issue.
Interesting. Sigal, what's your take?
When I think about the future, I keep coming back to the role of the Somali government. And I think that there's been a real absence on their part. Granted that, there's been like real political issues and the fight against Shabaab, security issues and all kinds of things. But I think it's going to be the onus is on the Somali government if they want to continue to fight for territorial integrity, to really offer something to Somaliland. And I don't think that's been done. That's not even been discussed. I think that the fact that the options are secession, I think it's up to the federal government of Somalia to really start to offer these options. There's a constitutional process that's going on in Somalia with the creation of a federal state. And this is, the constitutional process has dragged on and on and on. And I think one of the reasons, there's a lot of reasons for the delays, but one of the reasons has been, the desire to have we can't finish this without Somaliland, right? You can't run, you can't do a whole constitution without a part of the country that you claim as part of the country. But I do think, and I do think, like, if I'm looking at the way forward, I really think the burden is on the Somali government to start to offer, like, if the argument is that Somaliland should not be recognized, well, then what's the alternative? What is the, you know, is there some sort of special status being granted? Is there some sort of creative confederal structure that's going to be offered? How will Somaliland's interests be protected? How will its fears and grievances be addressed? And I think that is something that's missing, and it would be very interesting if we see that from the federal government of Somalia.
I think that's a great point. I wanted to ask you a bit more about what you see the government of Somalia's interests being. You were great at laying out at the outset of the call the recognition claims really from the perspective of the Somaliland government. And I should have asked then, what do you see as the key motivations and machinations and the any cross-cutting political issues that would be affecting how the Somali government thinks about Somaliland in terms of giving us a deeper understanding of what drives them, or also how you think they might work on this situation going forward? You and Mike have both pointed out that there are dramatic changes going underway. The international community has made real investment in trying to help expand the reach of the state and build capacity. Looking at it more from the government of Somalia's perspective, what do you see? And then I'm going to ask both of you, though, before we end the call, I think that's a key issue that you put on the table about what some alternatives would look like. I want to dig deeper into that, too, next.
So what would you say? What's the interest of, like, how does the Somali government see it? I mean, I think sort of the first and foremost is this concept of territorial integrity, right? And keeping the country together. Maybe this is sort of a slightly mythological point, but you know, the creation of Somalia was always about bringing the various pieces of sort of Somali territory together. And I think that there's sort of a kind of emotional attachment to, you know, the only of the five pieces, only two pieces were ever able to be brought together. And here it is now, almost like, you know, here's and one of these regions, one of these pieces is now saying, you know, I'm no longer, you know, part of this republic. So I think that there's sort of an emotional attachment. But also, I mean, I think, as a country, you know, the federal government, the country, you know, as a whole, Somalia is trying to rebuild the state in a sort of federal system with, you know, sort of, and strike that right balance between how much of, you know, what should be centralized and what things should be autonomous and left to the regions. And this is a very contested issue, and it's playing itself out, which I think has been in a lot of federal countries. And I think I think there's a recognition, of course, in Mogadishu that Somaliland has achieved, you know, huge strides in almost all areas, whether it's economic security and peace. So I think there's a desire to keep the country together. You know, I think keep the country together. I think that, you know, geopolitically, you know, Somaliland is sort of geopolitically very important, and that's part of the sort of overall strategic location of Somalia. I think, the policy, or rather the de facto policy of Somalia, of the various Somali governments to date, has always been not block whatever Somaliland is doing. I think this recent deal that we've just been talking about in Dubai Ports is the first time the federal government has sort of reared up and been like, oh, wait a minute, you know, should that be happening? But I don't think before this one particular deal, which, as Michael pointed out, has, you know, significant sort of symbolism and shows Somaliland really expanding itself. But before that, I don't think there was ever really any attempt to block or to get in the way of the progress and the small steps that's being made by Somaliland. So So I think it, I really think it's sort of a desire to keep the country together. I would say that motivates the federal government.
Yeah, if I could jump in. Those are great points. I mean, I've also, I think another lens to think about this as well is through the lens of domestic politics, like both in Somalia and Somaliland. I mean, this question of Somaliland, Somalia-Somaliland relations is very fraught. So in Mogadishu, I mean, Farmajo is like his predecessors. I mean, in a very weak and fragile political position. And he has fashioned himself politically as kind of an old school Somali nationalist, kind of a centralist. And so it is quite dangerous for him, I think, to go too far and move too fast on this particular issue. Like there could actually be blowback. And he has a lot of other things like Al-Shabaab, for instance, or dealing with the federal member states on his plate. So I think that's been one issue, right? His own domestic political position, not to mention, and Seagal said this earlier in our conversation, the issue of Puntland, that it's actually not really just a two-way conversation between Mogadishu and Hargeisa. There's also the Puntland factor. And they're watching this very closely, are raising concerns about Sanaag and Sul. And tend to be quite irritated about the prospect of a dialogue between the two countries pushing aside their own issues. And then, of course, if you go to Somaliland, this is a very big domestic political issue. I mean, you know, the politics of Somaliland today is in many ways the politics of seeking independence. And the political class, the political elite, are really, I mean, there's a strong consensus behind the idea of independence, and they impose that in very strong ways across the political system and society more broadly. Which is not to say that there aren't unionist elements or people have unionist sympathies throughout the country in different pockets of the country. There are clan dynamics to this as well. One has to consider. Don't really have time to get into that. But it is. I mean, to make concessions on the issue of independence would be dangerous for any government in our case. So this is also. So domestic politics is a real big problem, I think.
Okay. Understood. I appreciate that. I think that's an incredible lens that really rounds out how to be thinking about this relationship. I want to take a question from listeners, and then I'll try to weave that in to give you each an opportunity to sum up and thinking about the way forward, alternatives, any additional points that you thought weren't already teased out of the conversation. But moderator, can you please go to the question on the line?
Certainly, it comes from Alex Moore. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks, everyone, for the great call. I have what I hope is a quick question for you. I realize it's already kind of loaded there, but to what extent is the narrative that the creation of Somaliland would strengthen other independence movements in Africa true? Are there other states there that are carefully watching what's happening in Somaliland, kind of with an eye to their own independence movements from sovereign groups within, or groups that hope to be sovereign within their own countries? I kind of think about Kurdistan here in the Middle East and how it's very carefully watched by Iraq, Turkey, and Iran because this group, you know, is advocating for independence, but that independence movement in any one of those countries would affect all of them.
Alex, that's a great question. I'd like to put that to each of our panelists here. And I'd like to do so, I think, just in the remaining time, if you could each please weave that into how you see the situation going forward, what you're going to be looking for and most interested in as things proceed in the coming months and or years on this. I welcome that as you try to conclude to give you each a couple of minutes to both tackle this question and any remaining thoughts as well that you'd want to put on the table. Mike, maybe we could start with you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good question, and whenever people talk about the issue of Somaliland, they often raise this question of, is this going to be precedent setting, right? Is this going to reestablish, or is this going to obviate or kind of diminish old norms about sort of borders in Africa being being basically stuck in stone. And you'll note, of course, that there are two other examples of African states that have become independent since 1991, separated from other African states, Eritrea and South Sudan. I would say it can be the independence of Somaliland would be precedent-setting in some ways, but not in others. It's not precedent-setting because Somaliland was its own colonial entity. And under the rules of the African international system, enshrined in the OAU Charter, colonial borders are sacrosanct. So in some ways, Somaliland does have, under the rules, does have a right to self-determination and independence. Also, the act of union was a voluntary union, and then there is some precedent of voluntary unions being dissolved in the African context, right? So in that sense, it wouldn't be precedent setting and probably wouldn't have an impact in other parts of the continent. On the other hand, independence for Somaliland without Somalia's acceptance or endorsement, I think probably would be precedent setting in the African context. And this is an issue that I think has been raised in the AU about the Somaliland issue, and it's something to consider. That's not an argument for or against Somaliland's independence. I'm just sort of talking about the ways that this would be precedent setting and not precedent setting.
Understood. Okay. Seagal, you've got the final word here in the remaining 2 minutes. If you want to tackle the precedential issue, that's excellent as well, but it's also your opportunity to sum up and to let us know what you're going to be looking at and will be of greatest interest to you going forward.
So I agree that with Michael about the issue of sort of the importance, or rather the centrality of getting endorsement or some sort of mutual agreement between Somaliland and the federal and between the Somali government. I think that's going to be necessary for Somaliland to gain the recognition that it seeks. What I'm going to be looking for really is, as and hopefully these talks, you know, or there will be some sort of a format or a platform where dialogue, real and true dialogue, starts happening with a trusted mediator. And I'm going to be looking for whether there can be creative alternatives offered, and whether we can maybe move out of sort of the stark binary that I feel like we're in now, where the Somali government would not like to see Somaliland, you know, secede or be recognized as a separate country. And yet, on the other side, there's absolutely no way that Somaliland could ever go back to the situation that we had before 1991, where there was, you know, a sort of centralized government and overseeing the entire Republic of Somalia, including what is today Somaliland. So what is there an alternative, and would the Somali government take the lead in trying to offer up creative or attractive options that Somaliland could consider? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then it is a foregone conclusion.
Understood. I want to thank both of you, Seagal Abshir and Michael Woldemariam. Excellent commentary. I learned a lot and really appreciate your perspectives. Thank you to the Pacific Council, particularly Sumaya Quillian, for pulling us together and for hosting this series. And then to you all, the listeners, they'll be offline. Hopefully we can continue the conversation, and any questions that weren't answered, we can address those. But for now, thanks so much for joining, and we look forward to hearing from you on future parts of this series as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you. This officially ends today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.